Hello, everyone. My name is Kat Oriel of Forbes Breaking News, and today I'm here with Congressman Wesley Hunt of Texas. Congressman, thanks so much for allowing us to come to your office today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. Welcome.
Yeah, of course. So you're a freshman rep and one of the freshest faces in Congress, a rising star. So, and before we get into how your first year in office is going, can you tell me a little bit about your background and how that led you to where you are today?
Sure, sure. So, you know, where it starts for the Hunt family is in the military. I come from a military family. My dad's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army. My sister went to West Point and my family first, class 93. I went to West Point, my family second, 10 years later. My brother is also a West Point graduate. He's class of 2005. I'm class of 2004. So there's about 60 years worth of military service just in my immediate family. So you can imagine that service to my family is a very big deal. And my dad was very big on making sure that he raised kids that really appreciated this country, fought for this country, and did whatever we could in our power to leave it better than we found it. And so at one point, one fun fact, my brother, sister, and I were all stationed in Baghdad at the same time for about 3 months. I was an Apache pilot, which made me by far the coolest one in the family. My sister was a military intelligence officer in the Green Zone, and my brother was in the Navy in the Arabian Gulf. He went to West Point, but then cross-commissioned into the Navy. And so that kind of service and sacrifice is what it takes to preserve our values and our way of life. And so when everybody asks me, you know, Wesley, why would you go to Congress? Or why would you want to go to the swamp? I get asked that a lot. Is really one of the mandates of my parents, the home that I grew up in, and appreciation of this country, and continuing to find ways to serve this country, even if you're not flying an Apache in Baghdad. And this is what I call kind of my next deployment and my service to my country.
Yeah, I love the work of Angela Duckworth, you know, the psychologist who says grit is one of the most important factors of surviving the military academy. Yes. And so I'm wondering what your parents were feeding you guys that they were able to have three kids. You know, you mentioned a little bit, your dad instilled that in you, but what do you think the characteristic was between you and your siblings? Was it grit? Was it something else that your parents instilled in you?
Yes, you know, so my dad, being the colonel that he was, he had a whiteboard in our house. And on this whiteboard, he would put all of our chores up and all things that we need to do for the day, make your bed, do the dishes, all that kind of stuff. And above the whiteboard, on top of it, it said, God plus education equals success. And so I grew up in a very religious house. I grew up in a Baptist church, and it was the importance of making sure that you trusted God to order your steps, but also you got a good education. And then you will be successful in this country no matter what you look like, no matter where you come from. If you have those two things, you will be successful. And so, again, all three of us went to West Point. My sister got her master's degree in applied mathematics and was a West Point instructor. My brother and I were both cadets. My brother went to Harvard Business School. I went to Cornell University, earned three master's degrees in 4 years at Cornell, MBA, Master's of Public Administration, and a Master's in Industrial Labor Relations. And so when you combine military service, God, and education, it's a recipe for success in this country. And again, I always allude to the fact that we are living in divided, divisive times right now. But again, those elements, there is no race, there is no color, there is no creed, there is no background. The nuclear family, education, and God, that was the secret. And look, you know, we live in a constitutional republic right now that's based on democratic values, but my house growing up was not a democracy. Like my parents, like, did not play around. They were parents. They raised their children to be God-fearing Americans first, and that's what it took.
So now you are a parent of three yourself, so I'm just wondering, is your house a democracy? And yeah, what kind of values are you instilling in your kids? Are all three of them going to go to West Point as well?
You know, I'm not going to push my kids to go to West Point. I want them to go wherever they want to go. But those same values that I grew up with, I am absolutely instilling in my house. And I call them good conservative values, but also it's just, this is good old-fashioned parenting. But the good thing about it is this, my parents are still alive. And right now, today's Tuesday. Every Tuesday, they pick the girls up from school, a five-year-old, three-year-old, and a one-year-old little boy. And every Tuesday, they pick up the girls from preschool, and then they go get some Hunt tutelage. They go get some of what my parents instilled in us. My parents are also instilling in them. And every Tuesday and Wednesday, they get to go spend time with the grandparents. And they're learning. They're going to church. They're learning about God. They're learning how to read and study and also do a bunch of fun activities. But I get to see my parents pour into them. And I tell you, what's a huge blessing.
I'm wondering the moment that, you know, you decided to run for Congress. Was it your parents, your family? Like, who first told you you should consider running?
My brother, actually. My brother's my best friend. We're 10 months apart. And when I decided to run for office, I called my brother up and also this gentleman standing over here in the corner and gave him a call.
Who's the gentleman?
This is my comms director, my best friend, and a guy that I've known 15 years, who's been on this journey with me the entire time. And I know we were just talking about, hey, you know, this is an open seat now. Well, it's not an open seat. A long-term incumbent lost. And I said, you know, I think it's time for me to get back into the fight. And my brother was my first phone call, actually. My parents were shocked. They were like, why? Where's this coming from? They didn't really see it coming. Not right now. They thought maybe later on in life. But, you know, opportunity struck, and here we are.
So I'm assuming you're talking about 2020.
Yes.
When you made that first decision.
Yes.
But then you lost to Lizzie Fletcher, who
yes.
is serving in that seat still currently. So what encouraged you to run again in 2022?
So, you know,
that's always a test about grit. You talk about grit, yeah. You know, and losing that first election in 2020 was a real gut punch, because I don't lose much, and I don't like losing. Losing is terrible. But you learn a lot when you lose. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about, again, your grit and how bad do you want to do this and how bad do you want it. Now, when I lost, unbeknownst to me, every 10 years, we do a census in this country, and Texas got two new congressional districts. And it just so happened that one of them was drawn right in Harris County, where half of the district that I ran against Lizzie happened to be in. And so it just kind of made sense for me to get back into the saddle, get back to work, and get after that next election. It was a 9-person primary. We avoided a runoff, obviously, for a new seat. And then we end up beating our Democrat opponent by almost 30 points. But one thing I like to talk about my district is this. It's a white majority district in a suburb of Houston, Texas. And in that primary, I ran against 9 white guys and beat them all by 30 points. And then I ran against a white Democrat and beat him by almost 30 points. It's a district that President Trump would have won by about 25 points. So I always like to articulate that in a sense of, that's the Houston, Texas that I know and love. And I've been black for my entire life. And I'm gonna tell you that my district is judging me not by the color of my skin, but by the content of my character. That's the America that I know. And if you ask a lot of people on the left, they think that guys like me don't exist, but we do, we're alive and well.
Yeah, so now I'm curious to hear about your district. What are the issues, you know, most important to your constituents? What is keeping you awake at night? And what do you find that the issues are that are most pressing to you and your constituents?
Energy, energy, energy. Mm-hmm. So in my district is what's known the energy corridor. And Houston is loosely known as being the energy capital of the world. Just about every single major energy company in the world has some kind of play in the greater Houston area. And there's a long stretch of highway down I-10. It's called the Energy Corridor, and it's tantamount to like Silicon Valley for tech or Wall Street in New York for finance. This is the energy capital of the world, which makes me the energy congressman of the entire world.
I thought you were going to say energy king.
I might. I can make some adjustments. That might not, I might take that with me. The energy king of the world. I'll take that. but energy is a very big deal. If you could imagine every single job in my district is in some way tangentially related to the oil and gas industry, the hospitality industry, food and beverage industry, obviously energy, entertainment, you name it. It all feeds off that one cash cow for us. And that's why I'm all in for energy and all in for good, sound energy policy.
Mm-hmm. What has the Republican majority done in that regards?
Well, we did pass H.R. 1. And what we've watched is this administration from day one by killing the Keystone XL pipeline, over-regulating through FERC and the EPA, and basically they're taking the approach of destroying the oil and gas and energy industry in this country, while at the same time we are empowering Vladimir Putin and Venezuela and Iran and other rogue nations, when really, as President Trump said, we're sitting on liquid gold right now. Why aren't we using it? And I want to make this note. We are a country that does this cleaner and safer and better than any other country in the world. And it's not even close. We need to make sure that we unleash American energy, not just for our allies, but for us too. and to make sure that we have affordable energy that we can rely upon in the future. And look, I'm all for solar when the sun is shining and wind turbines when the wind is blowing. That's great. That's great. But we have to have redundancies. We have so many resources that are right at our feet. Why aren't we using them to the fullest extent? And that's what I'm fighting for.
Is there anything that you think that the Biden administration has done well when it comes to energy?
Actually, no.
Really?
No. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of a single thing that I've looked at the Biden administration and said, kudos. And here's why. Everything that they do is an attempt to pick winners and losers. And so if you're going to encourage a company to go greener, if you will, then you should also allow oil and gas companies that also want to get a little bit greener or implement some policies in their own personal company that makes them more environmentally friendly, they should be rewarded just like everybody else. The federal government does not pick winners and losers. And what I am watching from this administration is every single day the government stepping in and picking winners and losers. That's not what a capitalist society is built upon.
So if Joe Biden is to get another 4 more years, how do you hope that they would be able to work with Republicans if you maintain the majority on this issue?
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen, number one. so that's why we have a pretty big election coming up here in 2024, this year, here in November. And I tell you what, this is a make or break one for us. I like to think positively. I want to think that we're going to do very well in November. President Trump will be our president. But to answer your question, you know, we're going to continue doing this office what we always do. And that is, look, we have divided government. There's a Democrat president, Democrat Senate. At the end of the day, what can we do from this office to impact my district? And to date, this office has gotten over $50 billion to the oil and gas industry because my chief of staff and I worked tirelessly with the EPA and with FERC to release some permits that had been held up by this current administration. And if we can implement that just from one office, even if Joe Biden is there or not, that's what we can do. And I can assure you, especially for my district, Congressional District 38, Houston, Texas, I will continue to fight tirelessly for the industry.
So I'm curious about other topics that you're interested in. You serve on a lot of important committees, including the House Judiciary Committee. So I also do want to ask, is there anything that, you know, being in Congress has really surprised you, you know, in your first year? I think a lot of people don't really know what the experience is like for a congressman. So I'm just curious if there's anything that has been a little bit different than you would have thought, and also the work that you're doing on House Judiciary. I know there's a big hearing coming up tomorrow for House Oversight in the Biden impeachment probe. So if you could talk a little bit about where that stands as well.
Sure. Last year I flew on 118 separate flights, lots and lots of travel back and forth from here to Houston, mostly United actually.
Oh, okay.
We have 6 United flights per day. I'm very, very fortunate. It's a 2.5-hour flight direct every time. I'm very, very blessed to have that. Imagine if you lived in, you know, my wife is from a small town in Iowa. It would take all day to get back to Iowa. But for me, it's a 2.5-hour flight, lots of flights. And it was my goal to make sure that my family and my children knew who I was, even though this was my first year in Congress. My first week in Congress, my son was born. And as a combat veteran, military guy, I recall many a day where we would return home after a long deployment, and there were a lot of kids that didn't recognize their fathers. And for me, my family is first, and I wanted to make sure that my little boy knew who his father was when I walked in the room and I wasn't going to be a stranger. And so, mission accomplished. Little Willie knows exactly who I am, and I love every second of it. But that was a challenge for me to make sure that, you know, I kept that priority first to get back home. So the travel was quite shocking. The other thing is this, just like I said earlier, we have divided government right now. Republicans, we don't have the Senate and we don't have the presidency. And so it's up to our office to find ways to cut through the gridlock that may not be from a legislative standpoint. And that means signing on the letters here and there. That means putting pressure on certain agencies when projects are done well. That means us getting engaged and getting on the phone and making phone calls to the right people to move things along. That means procuring projects for my district back at home. And quite frankly, it's been one of the best years of my entire life. I love this job. But you cannot allow yourself to get bogged down by how divided we are right now, because that's the nature of the beast. Not much is going to happen right now in this country from a legislative standpoint. We have a 2-seat majority in the House. And you don't have the Senate, you don't have the presidency. So focus on what you can control, and that's what I've been able to do.
Well, I think a lot of people might hear that, and when you say divided government, some people from the outside might think that the Republican Party itself is a little bit divided right now. Is that a fair assessment?
The whole country is divided right now. And you answer your question, of course. I mean, when you have, I mean, our Speaker of the House, I mean, initially, Kevin McCarthy took 15 votes to become the Speaker. I mean, that's by definition divided. And you only have a four-seat majority. Now with retirements, a two-seat majority. Mm-hmm. I would totally agree with that. But as you can see too, the country's divided. And I tell people this a lot too. You get the government you vote for. Mm-hmm. I think that the American public wanted some gridlock right now. And if you look at the way our Constitution was written and how it was set up and our founding fathers, sometimes gridlock is good. And I think there are some benefits that we have seen to some of the infighting and some of what a lot of people would say the bickering amongst us here in Washington. That's actually a part of the process that is the American experiment. And while it might be messy, it's better than everywhere. It's better than anywhere else in the entire world.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as a rising star in the Republican Party, like I've said, and there's a poster behind me, the New York Times has also called you that as well. So where do you think the Republican Party needs to go from here?
What I want to be is the party that focuses on what it means to be an American. That is it. Mm-hmm. No more dividing along, you know, race, gender, religion, color, creed, none of that stuff. If you are a human being and an American that wants to put this country first, put our values first, if you want to secure our border, if you want to have a prosperous future, if you don't want to pay a lot of taxes, see, this has nothing to do with race. This has everything to do with what it means to be an American. I want that to be our party. And what I like to focus on more than anything is, again, being a black man in a white majority district, nobody cares that I'm black. I'm over that. What they care about is their representation. Do I put the values of my district and this country first? And am I going to represent them with pride and distinction? And this past cycle, I didn't have a primary opponent. I think we're going to do very well here in the general election because I adhered to those things and I will continue to do just that. That's the Republican Party of the future.
Last week, you had a very interesting testimony that I think represents a little bit of what you're saying of, you know, where you testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee about voting rights and the issue of voter ID. And I want to read a quote. You called out the demeaning and insulting claims from Democrats about how being black in America means you can't obtain a government ID to vote. And I feel like that's sort of an interesting example of what you're just talking to, where, you know, you don't want to just be looked at as, you know, along race and party lines. You know, we're just Americans, you know, just because we're black doesn't mean we can't have voter ID. Yeah.
I think I called it, it's the left soft bigotry of low expectations. Yes. And I don't subscribe to that under any way, shape, form, or fashion. I am an American. I am a veteran. I am educated, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I am so many things. I'm a congressman, I'm a combat veteran, I'm an Apache pilot. I am so many things before you get to the way that I look. And don't get me wrong, I'm black and I'm proud. I'll say it loud all day, every day. But that's not how I view myself, and what I do not like are benevolent liberals that try to wrap their arms around us and try to pat black people and people of color on the head and say, poor you, we all can figure out how to get an ID. We all can figure out how to be successful in America, but you can't. That's ridiculous. Because so a man thinketh, so he is, or so he or she is. And I like to make sure that we have high expectations for people, just like everybody else would have for themselves, regardless of the way you look. I understand this country's come a long way. My great-great-grandfather was born on a plantation. But yet here I sit before you, again, as a black man in a white majority district in a suburb of Houston, Texas, that's a strong conservative. That's where we are. And that's because that's the expectations that I have of myself, is the expectations that my parents had of me, and I'm going to have those same expectations for all Americans, regardless of the way they look.
But then what do you say to the people that say this is a systemic issue? Like, what is the reason that is preventing so many minority groups from getting voter IDs? And, you know, you also touched on the term personal responsibility, especially during that testimony. So that's my first question. And then my second question, going back to the personal responsibility, how do you instill that more if there's a systemic issue?
So it's not 1950 anymore. And this is something that was instilled in my house too at a very young age. My dad's 74 years old, which means that my dad was born in 1949 and he's still alive and well. My dad grew up in a segregated South in New Orleans. And my dad always tells me, son, you don't have it difficult. I had it difficult. So what's your excuse? That is all. This is not 1950, 1960 anymore. It's 2024. Things have changed. And the only thing that's preventing you from being anything you want to be in this country is you. And by the way, there are people that started off with way less, ended up with way more. There are people that weren't born in this country that moved here with nothing and are wildly successful. So the fact that you were born in this country, no matter how hard it might be for you, what's your excuse? And do not allow people to have low expectations of you because you will live up to that.
I am just curious as well, being a Black member of Congress, a Black Republican in Congress, do you feel like there is support from members of both sides? Because I know Rep. Byron Donalds has spoken out in the past claiming he was being ostracized from the Congressional Black Caucus. So do you think there is a need maybe? Have you considered joining that as well?
No.
Why?
The reason why is because ideologically, we don't align. On a policy standpoint, we don't align. Tacitly, there's a bit of a requirement that you have to at least work on X amount of things with members of the CBC. And given where I am politically, then this is not going to work for me. But that's an ideological issue, less of a Black issue. And to be honest with you, I get along with everybody. Democrats, Republicans, Black, white, I don't really care.
Do you think there is a need for a Black Republican caucus?
No. How about just a Republican caucus? You know, I think it was Morgan Freeman that said it best in an interview. I don't want Black History Month. I just want history. I want American history. I want us to be ingrained, to be inculcated in the very fabric of the country holistically. I just don't want to be Black this and Black that, because I want to be seen for way more than that.
Looking towards your future, what can we expect from you there? Do you plan to stay in Congress for the rest of your career? Want to be chair one day? Want to be leadership, governor? What is your future?
I have a one-year-old little boy, so I'm on the clock here. I'm on the clock. I'm giving myself 10 years doing this maximum. Because if you give yourself a limit, a time limit, it forces you to be more efficient. It forces you to be more ambitious. And it forces you to do more than if you had an unlimited amount of time in a position. One of the greatest inventions of all time is death. And the reason why is because you know it's finite. You know it's going to come to an end. So at a certain point, you better get with living before that day comes. So I got 10 years until that's going to happen. I'm a servant of this country. I fought in combat for this country. And the only thing that I want is for the people to decide where they want me to be. And if that's here for the next 10 years, that's great. If the people want me in a higher position or a higher office, the people will vote me into that. But at the end of the day, I'm living my best life, born and raised in Houston, representing the district that I grew up in. And the people will decide where my trajectory ends. But I got 10 years.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Of course. God bless you. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for being here.
Of course.